Wednesday, April 13, 2016. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday and bring you a different, unique outlook on the world of sports than you get anywhere else. You can download, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, maybe on Podcast Republic, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcast from, you can find the Daily Dose. Or you can head over to our website. Go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We always do post a link to the show there. And we usually do put up an article or two every single week that I think you will enjoy. If you've got a question, if you've got a comment, if you've got anything for us, you need some help with something, you can email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We do get emails here and there. And if it's something good, if it's something that I think, you know, people would like to hear, we'll read that. If you would like to keep that private, we can also do that as well, but we will always respond to you. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, got a couple things that we are going to get to today on the show. College basketball is over. Of course, it ended in amazing fashion last week with Villanova hitting the buzzer beater to beat North Carolina. We've got to hand out a few college basketball awards to finish out the season. The NBA, they're getting ready to finish up their regular season tonight. And there's a few different stories there. There's a few different things that are going on in the NBA. Can take a look at a few different playoff scenarios that could take place. A couple stories I want to touch on. And do you realize that the NFL draft is only about 2 weeks away? You know, every year we get to this NFL draft, we get to this kind of this part of the year, and you start getting these, you know, the so-called experts. And they're giving you their picks, and they're saying, well, here's the number one pick, and here's a player that I really like, and here's a player that's going to go really high. There's a few players in this NFL draft that I think are probably a little bit overrated. They probably don't deserve to be quite as high as they're being thrown out there to be. Going to take a look at a couple of overrated players in this NFL draft. And as we do every single week, you've got to make sure to stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5, always a very popular segment on the show. You never know which way the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. We've got something for you today that you'll want to stick around for. A few stories that are coming out this week that I want to talk about. The International Ice Hockey World Championships get started tomorrow. I know. Wait, hold on. Don't turn it off. Don't turn off the podcast just yet. Yes, that's 2 weeks in a row that we have touched on hockey on the Daily Dose. But give me a little bit of leniency here, okay? Just wait a second. The 2016 IIHF, International Ice Hockey World Championships, they get started tomorrow in Grand Forks, South Dakota. Countries, you know, from all over the world come in, and they're going to play in this under-18 tournament that's going to be taking place. Here's the problem, and it'll run for about 10 days. It's kind of, I don't want to say Olympic-like, but, you know, there is this world championship, you know, situation going on that's going to be taking place up there. Here's the thing, though. The Russian team, they're kind of in scramble mode as they try to get a team together. And that doesn't seem to really make much sense, does it? I mean, when you think back to Russian hockey, the Russians are always one of the strongest national teams in the world, right? I mean, you think back to obviously even, you know, the 1980 Olympics and just all the gold medals they've won, all the players that they put into professional hockey, all the great national teams that the Russians have always had. It seems like the Russians, they just have a ton of talent. They play a lot of hockey in Russia. It's cold. So it's a pretty good fit. They play a lot of hockey in Russia. So why in the world are they having to kind of scramble and piece together a team? Well, it kind of seems that a few members of their U18 team tested positive for the banned substance meldonium. Meldonium. Now, if you hear that, meldonium, and that kind of sounds familiar. That's the same substance that tennis star Maria Sharapova just got busted for. And what it's used for is they use meldonium. It's used to, like, increase blood flow. And what it does for you, like, let's say, you have a situation where your heart's not quite working right and you're having some struggles there getting good circulation. What this, banned substance does is it gets your blood flow increasing and you can work out a little more. It carries a little more oxygen to your muscle tissue. Do you see where this could be going? Do you see where this could be an advantage. And so a few players on the U18 Russian team got busted after testing positive for this. Which ones? Which ones, you might ask? Well, which players got in trouble? Well, actually, all of them got in trouble. Every single member of the Russian U18 team tested positive for meldonium. The coach has now been fired, and Russia is going to bring their 17-year-old team because literally their entire 18-year-old team got busted. Really? That's weird to me. Every single kid, not one nerd that was like, come on, guys, I don't know if we should do this. That's really strange to me. I mean, I went to parties like in high school and stuff, and it seemed like there were always a couple kids that were like, not only are we not going to participate in the you know, drinking or whatever might have been going on at these parties, but they were also threatening to like tell on everyone who did participate. No, not in this group. Not in this group. Everyone did it. I mean, peer pressure in Russia must really, really work, because every single member of the hockey team jumped in and took the drug. Apparently, I don't know, these guys don't know how to say niet, I guess. Speaking of illegal drugs, on Saturday, former Cleveland Brown quarterback Johnny Manziel told TMZ he was living in Hollywood with Denver Broncos linebacker and Super Bowl 50 MVP Von Miller. Now Von is actually living in Hollywood right now because he's a member, you know, of ABC's Dancing with the Stars. So he is actually got, I guess they provide a house for you to live in, or they give you like a place to live in for that show. But it turns out that now we've kind of come to find out Jonathan Football is not actually living with Von Miller. He is living in Hollywood, but apparently he's instead living with suspended Cleveland Brown wide receiver Josh Gordon. You know, you remember Josh Gordon. Well, maybe you don't remember him playing, but you remember him being suspended. He's been like suspended 3 or 4 times now. And in fact, he just failed yet another drug test because he turned in a diluted sample. Now, if you don't know what that means, if you're turning in a drug sample and you basically just give them water, then they're like, yeah, that's not actually what, that didn't come out of you. Like, you didn't just produce pure H2O. So if you did, there's something going on. So he was trying to mask something, or he's trying to do something, but he turned in a diluted sample. I'm not sure if Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon should be living together. Like, this doesn't seem like a good match to me. Like, I'm concerned about it because Johnny already has enough problems, and he hasn't really shown that much on the field that we can just kind of overlook these problems. There was some talk last week, maybe the Broncos were going to possibly be looking to sign him. Actually, it turned out they just kind of called, we're checking in, where are you at? Are you getting in trouble? Oh, you're living in Hollywood with Josh Gordon? Oh, yeah, that's all we know. Now, there's a couple sides to that. Denver could have been trying to leverage talking to Johnny Manziel against Colin Kaepernick. Johnny Manziel's agent could have been trying to leverage, oh, look, the Broncos are talking to me, maybe they're going to sign me. So there's a number of different games that are being played. I'm not sure that Johnny Football and Josh Gordon should be living together in any way, shape, or form. Like, this seems dirtier and more dangerous than when Pamela Anderson and Kid Rock got together. Like, remember Pamela Anderson was with Tommy Lee, and it was kind of gross, but you're like, well, yeah, they're both kind of freaks, okay, whatever. And then, remember she like got with Kid Rock, and you're like, oh, man, you managed to drain just a little more out of that pool? Like, the best case scenario for this relationship, best case scenario, like on the plus side, if everything goes well, is like a burning case of hepatitis. That's best case scenario. I'm not even joking here. Johnny Manziel and one of them might end up in a body bag, and I'm not wishing that on anyone. I'm just saying I'm very, very concerned about this. And if you are a fan of these guys, you should be concerned about this too, because this is not an ideal matchup. These two shouldn't be anywhere near each other. We did put out an article this week on Johnny Football on dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You might want to head over there and check out. The Broncos, speaking of the Denver Broncos, they did make a trade late last week. They shipped offensive tackle Ryan Clady to the New York Jets. They package Clady with a 7th-round pick, and in return, the Jets send them back a 5th-round pick. So basically, you didn't get anything. You got rid of Clady. You kind of swap picks. You move up 2 rounds. Big deal. So this is clearly a salary dump, right? I mean, Clady was due to make like $9 million this year, and he keeps getting hurt again and again and again. So the Broncos are like, well, we can't really afford him, one. Two, he's never healthy and never playing, and it doesn't sound like he's been all that willing to renegotiate his contract. So the Broncos are like, well, we kind of need to do something with him, and we need to free up some money. We've gone and signed Russell Okung, so hopefully we have enough cash now, freeing up this money. This will help. We had to move him, though. We had to get rid of him. And the Jets, don't forget the Jets, just had DeBrickshaw Ferguson retire. They wanted to renegotiate him. The Jets wanted to give him a new deal. Hey, we'd like to renegotiate. Nah, you know what? I'm good. Well, no. We just wanted to kind of renegotiate, maybe, you know, add a little more money on the front end or move a little money to the back end or however. You know what? No, I'm good. I'm just done. Everyone was like, well, he doesn't have a history of injuries. Why would he retire? I'll tell you why he retired. Because he gets beat up every single week. Which would you rather do? You stand here leaning down and I smash you over the head with a baseball bat, or you go sit on your couch. Which would you rather do? Yeah, so of course, DeBrickshaw Ferguson retired. So they kind of needed the help. Like, they need Ryan Clady. That's a good pickup for the Jets. They're going to have to, you know, pick up some salary, but they, you know, losing Ferguson, they now have the money to do that. But when this deal went down, when Clady got moved, I got, like, my email box and my Twitter feed, and I'm getting all these things saying, hey, Broncos are getting ready to pull the trigger on Colin Kaepernick. I mean, they just moved Ryan Clady. They just freed up this money. Now we know what they're freeing it up for. They're going to go get Colin Kaepernick. No, they're not. Not so much. That's not what they're looking to do. See, the Broncos, we kind of forget it. The Broncos still need to sign Von Miller. Remember Von Miller? You only see him everywhere. Remember Von Miller? Yeah, they put the franchise tag on him. But all the franchise tag does is it gives you a year to sign him without any other teams bothering him. Without any other teams trying to jump in the free agent market and saying, hey, why don't you come here? Hey, why don't you come over here? So it gives you a year to do that, but they still need the money. They're still going to need $17, $18, $19, $20 million. Now, they don't need all this season, but they're going to need a chunk of it. They still got to sign Von Miller. They're not moving on the Colin Kaepernick thing. And I don't even know if Elway wants to. Yeah, if you want to come to us and you want to give us a deal, fine. If you don't, we'll go with Sanchez. I don't care. I think that's how he looks at it. He just won with wheelchair-ridden Peyton Manning. Do you really think Mark Sanchez is a step backward? He might be an improvement over what they had last year at quarterback. Slow down on the Colin Kaepernick stuff. Not coming just yet. They got to sign Von Miller to a long-term deal. A lot has been made of Von Miller. I got a couple other tweets this week just kind of saying, aren't you worried about Von Miller? Aren't you a little bit concerned about Von Miller? I mean, he's all over the place. Since he won Super Bowl MVP, let's say he's been on Saturday Night Live. He's on the Grammys. He was at Texas A&M for some basketball games a few times. I think he was on, like, Ellen. He's in, like, some Best Buy commercials. He's on Dancing with the Stars. Like, Von Miller has capitalized on that Super Bowl MVP like no other. I mean, he's everywhere. And so the question I keep getting is, aren't you worried about Von coming back? There's a couple thoughts on this. First off, he's not a quarterback. Like, he's not a guy that has to be there every day studying the playbook. He's not that guy. If he's my quarterback, yeah, maybe I'm a little bit worried. He's a guy, put your helmet on and go eat the quarterback. That's your job. Go get him. Like, turn the dogs loose. Sick him, Vaughn. Yeah, I don't know that he has to do the ton of prep work. But here's my other question with this whole situation and everybody making a big deal out of Von. I heard some national hosts this week kind of talking about, yeah, Von Miller, he's messing around all offseason. Let me ask you a question. What's J.J. Watt doing right now? What is Luke Kuechly doing right now? I don't have any idea. Like, they might be doing worse stuff right now. I don't have any idea what they're doing. I know what Von's doing. He's busy. I'll give him that. But I don't have any idea. Well, like J.J. Watt's doing, I don't know. Maybe he's working out. Maybe he's on like a four-day bender. I don't have any idea what they're doing. The only reason we care what Von Miller is doing is because we see it. It's right in front of us. So there's a little bit more of, Von's on Saturday Night Live. Oh, yeah, Von was on Ellen. Oh, that's probably really taken away from his preparation. Is it? You know, I saw like on Twitter a couple weeks ago, there's a few NFL players that kind of all got together. And a couple different teams, but they'd all gotten together. And they were doing like this world trip. So they're like going on a jungle safari. And then they're going over to Europe. They're going to go down to Australia. How is that any better than what Von is doing? Like, they're not going to like the safari and training. Like, what are you doing, racing a cheetah? You're not going over there and like really putting it. Like, you're vacationing. You're relaxing. You're taking some time off. I don't have an issue with what Von Miller is doing. If nothing else, on Dancing with the Stars, he is kind of keeping a regimented schedule. He is staying in shape. I don't really watch Dancing with the Stars. That's not really my thing. But those guys do have to work at that. If nothing else, he's getting some cardio out of the whole situation. And I don't have a problem with that. I told you before, NFL draft is 2 weeks away, just a little over 2 weeks away. And we will get you ready for the NFL draft. We'll go through, take a look at some different teams, take a look at some different players, take a look at maybe some different landing spots for some players in the NFL draft. Here at the Daily Dose, we get you ready for those kind of events like no other. We will have a mock draft coming out. We'll do our second annual NFL mockery draft where we look at team needs and we really break it down and make sure that each team gets exactly what they need. So you might want to keep an eye out for that in the next few weeks. But today, I kind of wanted to take a look at, you know, some of those players that come out, they play their season, they finish out their year with their college football team, and then maybe they show well at the combine, or maybe we start to fall in love with their film, or maybe we start to look at some different things and we start to say, man, that guy's like a top five pick. That guy's like a top 10 pick. He should be, you know, high first round draft pick. Well, maybe. Or in the case of the guys I'm going to look at today, maybe not. Because some of these players that we start getting jammed down our throat by these draft experts, they start to fall in love. They start to look at film and they start to, oh man, this guy's really, really good. He's going to be great at the next level. Maybe not. Maybe not. So today, let's look at five players that I think are just a little bit overrated in the NFL draft. That if you have that NFL draft pick, and you're picking in the top half of the draft, or you're picking in the first round of the draft, or whatever it might be. It won't have to be New England. Don't forget, you don't have a first round pick. But if you are, you know, one of those teams that you get, you know, you have that high pick, you might want to be careful about these guys. You might want to be very, very careful about these guys. First guy I want you to look at, and it isn't that this guy can't play, but Robert Kimdichie, a defensive tackle out of Ole Miss, he can be a force on the field. He can be a monster on the field. But here's the thing. For all the talk about him, there's talk that he could go in the top half of the first round. He doesn't really produce that much. Like when you really look at his numbers, in three seasons, not one season, three seasons, 81 tackles and six sacks. Seriously? He had 16 tackles for loss. Solid, but 3 years? That's like five tackles for loss per year. There are guys in this draft that have five tackles for loss per game. Really? In the whole year? So his production isn't as high as maybe you might think it is. Because when you start hearing about, you know, the talking heads saying, oh yeah, Kimdichie is a phenomenal player and he's really a beast and he can really do some things. He can really, you know, move some. He's not that good. He's solid against the run. He's okay against the run. He certainly isn't that much of a threat in the passing game. He's not going to get to your passer. He's not that guy. Six sacks in three seasons? He's not that guy. But let's put all that stuff aside. Like, let's throw all that stuff aside. Prior to their Sugar Bowl game, Kimdichie was suspended because he got arrested and charged with marijuana possession. Okay, big deal. It's a kid. It's a college kid. He had pot. Big shocker. Yeah, there's a little more to this, though. Because the only reason that he was arrested was because he was staying at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Atlanta. And he busted out the window in the hotel. As bad as that is, then he proceeded to fall 15 feet out of said window. Now, that to me Like, I'm not getting ready to put a first-round draft pick on that guy. This is a guy doesn't have the sense to not break a window and then, you know, go lawn dart out of it. I don't need that guy. And again, if his production was through the roof and you just look at him and you go, well, yeah, but I mean, he's Ndamukong Suh. He's going to be phenomenal once you get him on the field. Well, he doesn't really produce that much when he is on the field. Be careful of Robert Kimdichie. Second round pick, third round pick, fourth round pick. Then maybe I'd take him. And I'll be very upfront. I think the Denver Broncos are a team that they are looking at him very closely. Maybe in Denver, he's a decent fit because he has so much other talent around him. I'm not that impressed with what he does on the field. I'll give you another defensive tackle, and I'm not picking on just defensive tackles, but Louisville defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, he's a nose tackle in a 4-3 situation, and the benefit that he has in this is that there's not that many nose tackles that are truly, you know, playing the one-gap nose tackle. Here's the thing about Sheldon Rankins. I like what he did. He actually did put up decent numbers, 133 tackles, 18 sacks, from the interior of the defensive line. It's not like he's playing defensive end. He did these things from the interior, but he's only 6'2 and like barely 300 pounds. He's going to be pretty undersized at the NFL level. He's going to wear down at the NFL level. I'm not saying the guy can't play, but they're talking about him maybe being a top 15, top 20 pick. That's a little high for a guy who might not be able to play every single down. That would worry me just a little bit if I'm looking at Sheldon Rankins. Let me give you another guy you've probably heard of. Wide receiver Corey Coleman out of Baylor. In 2015, dude put up video game numbers. He won the Fred Biletnikoff Award given to the best wide receiver in college football. He had 74 catches for over 1,300 yards and 20 touchdowns. How could I not like Corey Coleman? I mean, this is a guy that's going to come into the NFL and do some huge things, right? Well, not really. Because when you think about the Baylor offense, they run that spread offense, and his pass routes that he runs aren't pro-style routes. Like, that's not, it was like, hey, run a fly, or just, you know, button hook and turn it around. Like, that's all you got to run. You don't have to do anything. You don't really have to get yourself open, because in this wide open spread offense, we're either going to throw the deep ball, we're going to throw the quick slant to you, or that's it. And when you think about Baylor and head coach Art Briles, who is a phenomenal offensive head coach, name the last great wide receiver he's ever put out, though. Because we've had other guys from Baylor put up huge numbers. Levi Norwood, Tevin Reese, Terrence Williams. I don't know what happened to any of these guys. They might be serving you tonight at McDonald's. I don't have any idea. But wide receivers coming out of this type of system have a little bit of a jump to get to the NFL type level because they haven't played NFL style football. They haven't done that. They haven't played that. They haven't run those routes. They haven't learned how to block. They haven't had to do all the things that goes with being a true NFL wide receiver. They were like, hey, run deep. We'll throw it to you. That's it. Be careful of Corey Coleman. Again, I don't have an issue with teams going to get him. I wouldn't be getting him in the top half of round one. He's not a polished enough NFL player. I'm going to give you another one that Denver Bronco fans probably aren't going to like. Memphis quarterback Paxton Lynch. I know there's a lot of talk. Denver needs to go draft Paxton Lynch. Here's my concern about Paxton Lynch. He's got a big arm. He can fire the ball down the field. He can take some chances and really chuck it down the field. He's not that accurate of a passer, though. He's a big, strong kid. He's a moose of a kid. He's like 6'5 and 250. He's a big, strong kid. But he's not a very accurate passer. He's not a guy that, honestly, for a guy that can scramble and a guy that can move, he doesn't throw the ball that well on the move. Denver is going to be looking for a guy that does the play action, rollout, bootleg stuff, right? That's not his strength. Now, maybe he could get better at that. Maybe he could improve at that. And we could see development in his game working with Gary Kubiak, working in this system over and over again. But if you're going to spend a first-round pick on this guy, it's going to be some expectations there. And I don't think Paxton Lynch is capable of living up to those. Now, if you could get him in the second round again, yeah, maybe. But I would not waste a high pick on Paxton Lynch. He is a project Don't forget me saying that. He is a project. Whoever gets him, you're going to have to work with him, because playing at Memphis and playing against some of the schools, that it's going to be a big, big jump for Paxton Lynch to go to the NFL. Huge jump. Last player I'm going to give you, and this player is probably the highest ranked player of all these players, but again, and I'm not saying he can't end up being a solid player. I'm not saying any of these guys can't develop, but I'm saying be careful drafting them too high, because they might be a little bit overrated in this draft. Most of the NFL experts have Florida State cornerback Jalen Ramsey as a top five pick. Okay, maybe, but he's a very raw talent. He's not very polished as a cornerback. He bounced back and forth at Florida State between corner and safety. I don't know if he's a top five pick. I don't even think he's a top 10 pick. I don't have any idea what we can do. He's a great physical specimen. He was very, very good at the NFL Combine. But it's going to take him a few seasons to truly hone his craft and be worthy of a high pick. If you take Jalen Ramsey, if your team selects Jalen Ramsey, and you're sitting there saying, hey, he's a step in, first day, he's going to be the starter, you might be disappointed, because I got news for you. NFL quarterbacks are looking at him saying, oh, you're cute back there. Yeah, I'm coming right at you. Jalen Ramsey, a great athletic talent. He may end up being a phenomenal corner. He is not a phenomenal corner right now. He hasn't played the position well enough. He's just very, very talented athletically. And right now, that's all he's bringing to the table. Like, that's the only thing he has right now. Hey, let's jump over to college basketball. We've got to jump over to college basketball. We've got to hand out some Daily Dose college basketball awards. You know, it was a wide open year in college hoops. It was kind of funny, because as we were getting closer and closer to, I've been saying all year, this is going to be a wide open college tournament. This is going to be a wide open college. The top teams kept losing. We saw Kansas, they were highly ranked, lose. We saw Michigan State, they were highly ranked, lose. We saw North Carolina, they were highly ranked, they lose. We kept seeing the number one team in the country get knocked off. It was a wide open year. But it was funny, because as we started getting closer to the tournament, you started seeing the experts start going, yeah, you know, I know we talked about it being a wide open year, but now that we're here, we're going to see the big dogs just take over. Like, it's going to be, you know, the Michigan States and the Kansas, and it's going to be the number one seeds getting through. Yeah, except that not so much. Because we did see a wide open tournament. We saw Michigan State go down on the first day. And I don't think it was, you know, a situation of anything else. They just ran into the wrong team on the wrong day. That's what makes March Madness so great. It was just wide open. I do think college hoops needs to improve their product. I won't lie. I've told you this before. College basketball needs to make us interested in college basketball before it gets to March. There's no reason to watch it. Like, I'm a huge college basketball fan, and I'll watch, like, I don't know, 6 or 7, maybe 8 games before it really gets into March Madness, at least before the conference tournaments. I don't watch it that much. I'll watch the Christmas stuff. When they're playing games over in Hawaii all hours of the day, I'll watch some of that stuff. I'll watch, you know, some rivalry games. And like I said, I'm a college basketball like junkie. Like, I'll watch it. But for the most part, how many people out there are watching games before it gets to March Madness? Nobody. Nobody really cares. They've got to do a better job of that. And this probably all still goes back to, can we get players to stay in college for more than 1 year? Now, before we go down this path too far, understand, if I'm calling the shots, if I was calling the shots, when you graduate high school, if you want to go to the NBA, go ahead. I don't have any problem with you doing that. If you want to get an agent, go ahead. I don't have any problem with that either. But if you do declare for college, if you do sign with Duke or Carolina or wherever you might sign, then you've got to stay 3 years. If you want to jump, it used to be called going hardship. Hey, my family needs money. My family needs money. I'm only 18 years old, but I'm going to go play against a bunch of 25 and 27-year-olds. It's going to be tough. I'm going to declare hardship and go to the NBA. Okay, I get that. I have no problem with that. You got to do what you got to do. If you just got out of high school and you can't really afford to go to college, you might have got a job right out of high school and started working. Hey, I got to feed my family. I got bills to pay. No problem. Go ahead. Do what you got to do. It might not be easy. Or maybe you're, you know, LeBron James or Kobe Bryant, and you're capable of doing that. But if you do say, I'm going to go to college, okay, then you got to stay for 3 years. And we're going to teach you how to actually live, and you're going to get a valuable education out of this process. That just makes sense to me. Understand this, though. The reason that is not happening has nothing to do with college basketball. It's not college basketball saying, well, we want them to go after 1 year. They don't want that. They would love to keep guys for 2 or 3 years. The reason is the NBA Players Union. That's why it's not happening. It seems to me college coaches want that. NBA coaches want that. They would get a more polished product. They would get a more proven product when they would get players out of the draft. The only people that don't want it, the NBA Players Union. And the funny thing about it, when you think about it, they're probably costing themselves some money by not doing that. Because the players in the league are getting bumped out of the league by these young kids, unproven, coming in and taking salary from them. NBA Players Union, not always the most well thought out. Think about this just a little bit. Let's let these guys, if you want to declare, go ahead. If not, stay there 3 years, polish your product, get better, get an education, a few different things. Players Union gets that screwed up. March was great. March really was great. It was a fun tournament. It was some good stuff. Let's hand out a few Daily Dose College Basketball Awards that we've got here. First off, our Player of the Year in college hoops. You know, a couple different guys I could make a case for. There's a few different players I could make a case for. Denzel Washington at Michigan State had a phenomenal year. I think he is one of the most talented players, a guy that finds a way to win, a guy that is tough, a guy that's going to translate pretty well to the next level. I could definitely make a case for him. Tyler Ulis at Kentucky. You know, everybody kind of started to fall asleep on Kentucky, and they started to get hot as it came into the tournament. Tyler Ulis had a phenomenal year. There's a few different guys we can make a case for Player of the Year. I'm going to give my award to Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield at Oklahoma. Just for the fact that he carried his team farther than those other guys did. He got his team clear to the Final Four. And then his team completely quit. And they were totally and completely gutless once they got there. But still. Well, and also we found out he can't really dribble. But why am I giving it to Buddy Hield? No, he got them there. That's the bottom line. I'm giving it to Buddy Hield at Oklahoma, and that's all there is to it. Buddy Hield, Player of the Year. Nice job. Coach of the Year. Coach of the Year. A few different coaches you could go with. You could go with the Roy Williams. Roy Williams had, the job he did. Granted, he had a ton of talent, but to put that talent together and to get them as far as they did, there's a few different guys. I mean, Lon Kruger. I guess we go back to the quitting thing on Oklahoma, so maybe not so much him. Did you know that we have an award? When we hand out these awards, we've handed out these awards now. I think there's a third year running. We have an award that is the Villanova Award, and we give it to the team that is like it's a high seed, and then they choke in the dance. But I gotta say, there was no choking from Jay Wright's Villanova squad this year. I mean, Jay Wright pushed all the right buttons this season. His kids were playing such good basketball. To watch them execute offensively, to watch them execute defensively, Jay Wright, he's got to be my coach of the year. And man, on some level, it's not even close. He did everything right in that tournament. It seemed like just when you thought we might be able to, Villanova, I don't know if they're, no, he pushed the right button. He had his kids playing such smart, well-executed basketball down the stretch. Jay Wright is the guy. Yes, I know. I know what you're thinking right now. He moisturizes. He carries a man purse. And he probably takes longer to get ready for things than his wife does. I know. But he's very, very good. He's a good coach. And he proved that this year. And to be honest, his pores have never looked better. Our Villanova Award, I just talked about it. Our Villanova Award, we give it out to the team that's like the highest seed, and then they drop out in the tournament. It used to be the Arizona Award. To go back a couple years, we called it the Arizona Award because it's given to the team that looks so good going into the tournament, and then they go out in the first round, and they completely wreck your bracket. Like, you're like, oh, I had those guys going like to the Final Four, and then boom, they're totally gone. First week, first game, done. So, who could we give it to this year? How about Arizona? Who lost by 10 to Wichita State. Wichita State, a team that was limping into the tournament, had to play in the play-in game. They go by Arizona. Congrats, Arizona. You know what? I'm gonna make an official Daily Dose change here. It's no longer the Villanova Award. We're gonna take that off. It's the Arizona Award. It's your award again. Good job, Wildcats. It's all you. Our next award we're gonna give to. We're going to hand out the Anderson Hunt Award. And we give the Anderson Hunt Award to the player that just has a phenomenal tournament. They have such a good tournament. They just somehow put it all together, and they find a way to play their best basketball in the tournament on the biggest stage. And then we're never, ever, ever going to hear from them again. Like, they're not going to go to the pros. They're not going to do anything else. I'm not even going to say they're going to go over to, like, overseas and play. Like, you're going to see them, like, down at the rec center playing. Who else could it be? We've got to give it to Villanova's Ryan Archidiacono, who he was so good in the tournament. I told you last week, he kind of had some old man game to him. He'd go in with the jump stop, the reverse pivot, and drop the shot in your eye. He was so good. And we're probably never going to see him play basketball again. Like, that was it. Like, he'll be at the rec, and you could probably get a pickup game with him. But he's not going to go to the league. He's not going to play anywhere. But how good was he in the tournament? You got to know him. You got to know how to say that crazy last name. Yes, the first few times you're like, his first name's Archie? No, his first name's Ryan. Why do they keep saying his entire name? Do they have to say it the entire time? But he's going to win our Anderson Hunt Award. Our Greg Oden Award. We're going to hand out a Greg Oden Award this year. And that award is given to the player that looks like he's already like 60 years old, even though he can like just barely buy a beer. You know, though, it seems like there's always those guys. Maybe we could have named it the Moses Scurry Award. I don't know. There's those guys that, for whatever reason, they're like Benjamin Button. Like, they're getting older. Like, they're 18 years old, and they look like they're like 68 years old. I don't know what it is. But this award this season has got to go to Kansas Jayhawk forward Perry Ellis. Because, let's be honest, when you see Perry Ellis, he's got the receding hairline. I think he's been at Kansas, what is he, like an 8-year letterman? It seems like he probably decided to go to Kansas because of the, you know, Louisiana Purchase back in 1803. I'm just glad that, you know, on his covered wagon adventure to go to Kansas, that he didn't, like, I don't know, catch a bad case of, like, dysentery or like, rubella or something like that. Just glad to see Perry Ellis, you know, get through his college career at Kansas. It seems like he's been there a while. Finally, our final award, college basketball. We'll wrap up college basketball for the season. And then, I don't know, we'll talk about it again in March, maybe. We have to give out our LeBron James Award. And you might be sitting there going, how in the world does LeBron James have an award? He didn't even go to college. Well, that's true. That's true. But when you look at the skills that LeBron James has, when you look at the skills he possesses, there are kind of, you know, maybe there's a player or two that kind of resemble what he has. I mean, think about it. LeBron James has got size. He seems like he's bigger and stronger than everybody else. You know, he's got that strength. He can handle the ball. He can drive inside. He can finish around the basket really, really well. He can rebound. He's a great passer. He sees over the defense. He's a little bit of a pass first guy. Remind you of anybody? Does that remind you of anybody? A little bit, maybe. He melts down. He quits sometimes in games. He's probably going to get more than a few coaches fired in his career. I've got to give the LeBron James Award to freshman phenom LSU's Ben Simmons, who looks like he's going right down that same track. Gonna be stronger and bigger and better than everyone else, and he won't win as much as he should, and he'll probably get a few coaches fired. Yeah, he's got to be our LeBron James winner. Speaking of LeBron James, let's talk a little bit about the NBA. Because the NBA season is nearly complete. They finish up tonight. And we're going to look at a couple different playoff scenarios, but there are a couple stories I want to look at first. First off, who is your NBA MVP? If you were going to cast a vote, if you were given a vote for NBA MVP, who would you give it to? Of course, as the season gets further and the season wraps up, we'll hand out all those awards here on the Daily Dose. But, I mean, it's not even close, right? I mean, Steph Curry, he was the league MVP last year. But do you realize that Stephen Curry is the most improved league MVP ever? Steph Curry jumped last year when he won the MVP, 23.8 points per game. He jumped up to 29.9 points per game. That's 6.1 difference. I mean, he improved his game. He didn't win the championship and then say, hey, yeah, great championship. Let's go party. No, he improved. He wins the championship and he goes, no, I'm going to go get better. A lot of doubters last year. A lot of people saying, well, you guys got lucky. Steph got lucky. You didn't even win the MVP. They didn't even give him the MVP. He went out and improved. That's the biggest point difference for an MVP since 1983, 1984. Larry Bird jumped from 24.2 points per game up to 28.7, a 4.5 point jump from an MVP. 4.5 from Larry Bird. Steph Curry goes 6.1. Huge jump for Steph Curry. So Curry has been amazing. It's not even close. He's the league MVP, not even close. Who's number two? Who's number two? Who would you put down as your league MVP if you're voting? You got to put three guys down. Kawhi Leonard's probably the best player in the NBA, at least the most complete player in the NBA. He can hurt you at both ends. Shooting the highest percentage from three-point range on the offensive end, the best defender in the league probably isn't even close. I'll put Kawhi Leonard at number two right now. Who would your number three guy be, though? Number three. I mean, Kevin Durant has had a phenomenal season. Look at the numbers Durant is putting up. Chris Paul is having a great season as well. Might have to put Chris Paul in that conversation. Russell Westbrook. How good is Russell Westbrook? And you might like or dislike Russell Westbrook. He plays with such a burning intensity when he gets on the floor. He just looks like he's angry. He just attacks the basket. Westbrook has been phenomenal this year. LeBron James? Where's LeBron? I mean, LeBron James, especially those last couple weeks of the season, kind of seems like he's getting going, but it's odd to me when you look at the top MVP vote-getters, LeBron's not, he might not even be in your top three. He might be down at four or five. Now, you're starting to see Cleveland flex a little bit of muscle. Like, all the antics and all the nonsense that LeBron does, it seems like they're kind of starting to get it together now, and it helps that they're playing in the East, let's be honest. LeBron has still been insanely valuable to the Cavs. The Cavs would be very, very average without him, but isn't it interesting to see how fast he's kind of been passed by Steph Curry, by Kawhi Leonard? Like, LeBron James was just like 1 year ago, we were talking about best player, not even close, in the NBA, it's not even close. And now you're like, well, I don't know, he's three or four, maybe he's five. Interesting to see how fast that's passed. You know, the New York Knicks probably need a new head coach. I mean, Kurt Rambis is the current, like, interim coach, but let's be honest. Kurt Rambis has no business having that job. We've seen the Knicks, they don't look very good. Rambis has not looked like he completely knows what he's doing. Rumors are that Phil Jackson is still kind of leaning towards keeping Kurt Rambis, but if he opens it up, he has a few candidates that he's looking at. He's looking at a few different guys. Maybe he's looking at himself, I don't know, but he's looking at a few different guys. I'm going to give you a couple guys that he's looking at. And if he could actually get him, because you can look at whoever you want. If you can't get him, it really doesn't make any difference. He's looking at former Cavaliers coach David Blatt. Blatt is a guy that you bring in if you have a bunch of young talent, does know how to be professional, does know how to play. He'd be good with that. Can you imagine David Blatt trying to tell Carmelo Anthony something? I mean, seriously. That's not going to work. He could be looking at Golden State assistant coach Luke Walton. Luke Walton obviously showed that he's at least capable of managing a team. He did very, very well in Steve Kerr's absence at the beginning of the season. Luke Walton would be a guy you might look at. If you're Luke Walton, I don't know why you'd take that. If I'm Luke Walton, I don't take the Lakers job and I don't take the Knicks job anytime soon. They are both a mess. I'll stay with Golden State a couple more years and ride that out and see if I can't get something better. Phil Jackson could be looking at Brian Shaw, former Nuggets head coach Brian Shaw. It went bad in Denver and it would probably go bad with the Knicks. But Brian Shaw is a Phil Jackson guy. He's a triangle guy. Maybe he would look at Brian Shaw and think that maybe, you know, that first time around, the experience he had with Denver could make him a little bit better of a player or a better coach. He could be looking at former Chicago Bulls coach Tom Thibodeau, who I think is probably the best coach that's out there. Thibodeau proved this year just how valuable he was when we've seen the downfall of the Chicago Bulls this year. They went from a year ago being a contender in a bad Eastern Conference. They can't even hardly make the playoffs this year. I don't think they'll get in. Tom Thibodeau obviously was doing something right in his time at Chicago. He would be a guy that you definitely would at least have to keep in mind. If I'm coaching the Knicks, that's the guy. If I'm coaching the Lakers, that's the guy. I'm going to Tom Thibodeau. So, there, you know, former Oklahoma City Thunder coach Scott Brooks. Maybe you like Brooks and I don't know, the way he has his guys just go stand in the corner on offense. I don't know. But maybe, you know, maybe Phil Jackson likes him. You know who's not getting even talked about? You know who's not even going to get an interview? You know who is not even being discussed for the New York Knicks job that probably should be? Probably the best player in New York Knicks history, Patrick Ewing. Why is Ewing not even getting a look? He doesn't even get an interview. David Blatt gets an interview. Pat Ewing doesn't even get an interview. Patrick Ewing has been an assistant in the NBA now for 14 seasons. Wizards, Rockets, Orlando Magic. He's currently with the Charlotte Bobcats. He's been an assistant head coach. Yet we don't hear him being talked about for these head jobs by anyone ever at any of these jobs. You never hear Patrick Ewing's name being brought up. And you know why? Do you know why he's not getting a shot? Do you know why he's not being talked about? Well, some of it is racial. Let's be real honest. We know, as much as we don't want to look at that side of it, we know some of this. Because look at those top coaching candidates. Blatt, Walton, Brian Shaw, African-American, Tom Thibodeau, Scott Brooks, a bunch of white guys. So some of it is racial. I think we can probably safely say that. You know what it is, though? Size bias. Size bias. Look at all those coaches. They're all little guys. Luke Walton maybe is the biggest guy of the bunch. But when you think of great minds in basketball, you don't think of the center, do you? You think of the point guard. Oh, he's the point guard. He's the quarterback. He's the guy calling the plays. He's the guy. Yeah, but Patrick Ewing was doing that stuff when he was with the Knicks. He was calling the defensive sets. He was calling even some offensive sets. He was the smartest guy on the New York Knicks for years. How is he not even getting a sniff of any of these coaching jobs? He is a very, very qualified candidate. If you are an NBA owner, you got to at least talk to Pat, don't you? He's a much, much better coaching candidate than he's getting credit for. Patrick Ewing is getting biased against because he was a big man. Oh, well, he'll only know how to just coach our big men. That's all he'll be able to do. He knows the game. He's been coaching the game for a long time. He's been playing the game for a long time. Patrick Ewing deserves a shot. The NBA finishes out the regular season tonight. And there are some really, really important games in the final night of the regular season. Let's look at just a couple of these, and I won't bog you down with too much of this, but look at a couple of these games coming up. So the top spots in the West are fixed. One is going to be Golden State. Two is going to be San Antonio. Three is going to be Oklahoma City. Four is going to be the Clippers. That's locked in. Over on the Eastern side, now the top two spots are locked. Cleveland is the one. They will host number 8 Detroit. That is a done deal. Detroit can't move up or back. They will be the 8 seed. Remember, Detroit has beaten Cleveland 2 times. They actually play each other tonight, and I can't imagine either team is going to show anything. They won't do anything. So that series will probably be 2-2 going into the playoffs. Could be an interesting series. Stan Van Gundy's a pretty good coach. He gets his guys to play hard. Keep an eye on Detroit. Toronto. The Raptors will be the number 2, and they will host number 7, the Indiana Pacers. After that, you know, the 1 and the 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, it gets a little bit more complex. Over on the Eastern side, right now, Miami's the 3, Atlanta's the 4, and Boston's the 5. Miami plays at Boston tonight. Pretty big game. That's like a playoff game tonight. And the thing about Miami, they could finish anywhere. If they win, they'll stay in third. If they lose and they don't get, you know, a little bit of help, they could drop all the way down to the 6th seed. You could go from the 3 to the 6 real easy. The best the Boston Celtics could do is they could be a 4 seed if they win tonight and they get a little help. Or they could be down, clear down at the 6 as well. So a couple interesting scenarios playing out over on the Eastern side. On the Western side, a couple games just to keep in mind tonight. Memphis is the 7. They could move up to the 6 tonight. The problem is that they face Golden State. And Golden State is going for number 73 tonight. So Memphis probably going to be sticking at the 7. Right now, the Rockets, the Houston Rockets, are the 8. If the Rockets beat Sacramento, they're in. They stay at the 8. They'll get in. But if they lose to Sacramento, Utah could win a game and slip in. Utah needs to have Houston lose. Utah has to go to the Lakers tonight and face the Lakers in Kobe Bryant's final game. So it won't be easy. You know the home crowd will at least be into it. And you know Kobe, you can't imagine he's going to go out with a whimper, right? I mean, he's going to go out jacking up. I'll say Kobe goes for 50 tonight. No, not points, shots. He'll have 50 shots tonight. But yeah, I mean, Utah has its work cut out for him. They want to get in the playoffs. They need some help from Sacramento, who has basically quit on the season. And then they need to beat the Lakers in Kobe's final game. And I fully expect Kobe to go out firing. Big surprise. So tonight, really, there are some playoff games for a few teams, depending on seeding, and some even to get into the playoffs. Here's a scenario we should probably talk about. Golden State rolling. Give a ton of credit to Golden State. They're going for 73 tonight to pass the 96 Bulls. It's been an amazing run. I fully expect them to blow out Memphis tonight. I don't think that game will be close. I think Golden State makes a statement and just blows out the Memphis Grizzlies. Grizzlies aren't very good anyways. I expect Golden State to blow them out. But here's just something to keep in mind as we go into the playoffs. They're going to probably win their 73rd game tonight. They're going to be the winningest team in NBA regular season history with a win tonight. But when you start to look at the playoffs, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a cakewalk for Golden State. Think about this. First round, they'll probably get the Houston Rockets. I know. Houston, whatever. But that's not as easy as it looks. Houston can score points. And in the last probably month, they're starting to play a little bit better. We're starting to see James Harden really, really get going. I know he gets a lot of blame for not playing defense. He's really, really good at the offensive end. Okay, so they'll get by Houston. Maybe Houston gives them a game or two or just challenges them in a game, but they'll beat Houston. I get that. Get by Houston, you get to see the Clippers, who now have Blake Griffin back, who are starting to play pretty decent basketball, and who could kind of grind on you. Don't forget, Chris Paul is quietly having one of the best seasons of his career. Yes, I expect Golden State to get past that. I expect them to get by LA. They could give them a little bit of a challenge, but I expect them to get past LA. And I just can't. It's hard for me to see a team beating Golden State two times in a row. That's where I'm struggling. And if that's the case, then you're going to have to beat them on their floor once. Because if it goes 2-2, 1-1-1, they're going to steal a game from you in your place. You're going to have to get one in their place. That's not going to be easy. It's a tough place to play. So you get by the Clippers. Golden State gets by the Clippers. They could have San Antonio waiting for them, who probably has a little bit of an easier path. And if you somehow do get by the Spurs, which will not be guaranteed, we know that the Spurs are capable of at least kind of flipping that switch at times. They're old. They could put together a few games, though. You probably have the Cleveland Cavaliers waiting for you. And here's the thing to think about with Golden State. No one cares about you winning 73 games if you lose in the postseason. No one cares about the New England Patriots going 17-1 or whatever it was. No one cares about the 96 Red Wings winning 62 games when they lost in the Western Conference Finals. You have to win the title. As good as Golden State has been this year, and they're going to win 73 games this year, it doesn't matter if you lose in the postseason. No one's going to remember any of it. Hey, as we do every single week, we have got to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5, always a popular segment. Got to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. I started thinking about the NCAA tournament. We only talk about college hoops for like a month. Like that's it. And then that's the end of it. And then we shift over to everything. We start talking some baseball. We start talking some football. We start talking NBA. I might even have a sentence or two about the NHL. Whatever it might be. But I started thinking about we need to have at least one more top five March Madness, you know, kind of top five, because we don't get very much time with him. We only watch college hoops for like a month. And I started to think about, you know, our Anderson Hunt winner, Ryan Archie Diacono, and the fact that we may never see the guy play again. Let's be real honest. I loved watching his style. I loved watching the way he carried himself. I loved watching him play. But, you know, it seems like there is a little bit of a tradition. It's not huge. It's more frequent as of late that we see players named the most outstanding player in the NCAA tournament, and then we never see them again. And Archie Diacono was named the most outstanding player of the tournament. And I don't know if we're ever going to see him play again. But I started to think about some of the other most outstanding players that have been named. And they don't always turn out great. Sometimes we never really hear from them much again. So today, our Daily Dose Top 5, we count down the least outstanding players of the NCAA tournament. Yes, they were great in the tournament, but we never heard from them again after the tournament. Number 5 on our list, 2000. Michigan State guard Mateen Cleaves. Cleaves was phenomenal. Led the Spartans to the championship against Florida. He averaged 12 points a game and 7 assists per game. He had, in his final senior game at Michigan State, he handed out 20 assists. Mateen Cleaves was drafted number 14 overall by the hometown Detroit Pistons. Hey, I'm going to get to play in my hometown. Going to get to stay here in Michigan. Going to get to, you know, kind of get this thing going up here with Michigan. He played just 78 games, and then they traded him, and then pretty soon he was out of the league. Out of the league. 6 seasons. He never really got any playing time. Like, he was on the roster, but he never got any playing time. And then in October 2015, he was actually arraigned on a sexual assault case, but we'll leave that part of it out. Here's a guy who you looked at almost, this is going to be a very, very good player in the NBA. Mateen Cleaves can play. Never made it. Was named the most outstanding player of the tournament. Was the least outstanding player afterward. Never did anything with it. Number 4 on our list, 1997. This is kind of all relates into our college basketball awards. The one year that our new Arizona award, the one year Arizona actually did slip through was because of this guy, guard Miles Simon. He teamed up with Mike Bibby in the backcourt with Arizona. And he led Arizona to the championship over Kentucky in overtime. Now, when Arizona beat Kentucky in overtime, Kentucky was a pretty heavy favorite. Like, we're all used to Arizona choking in the dance, right? I mean, we're still used to it now, let alone then. They never won anything. Everyone had favored Kentucky. Everyone had kind of picked Kentucky in the tournament. When the game ended and Arizona wins, Miles Simon went in the locker room. And he refused to talk to the media. And anyone who came up to him and said, hey, Miles, just want to talk to you, you know, about the run that Arizona went. He said, hey, I'm not talking to you. You didn't pick us. I'm not talking to you. No, I'm not talking to you. You didn't pick us. I'm not talking to you. Well, that's cute. But that's kind of the job that they had to do. Like, they kind of had to pick someone. And let's be honest, we know what Arizona usually does in March Madness. They choke and give it away. Miles Simon ended up getting drafted in the 2nd round by Orlando. He played 5 games as a pro. Done. Out. 5 games. He is now a broadcaster on ESPN, which is really interesting with how he treated the media when he was a player. I wonder if that changed how he treated the media. Number 3 on our list, 1987. We talked about him last week. Indiana guard Keith Smart, the junior college transfer, hit the game winner to get Indiana past Syracuse. When he was in that tournament, though, he shot 14 of 22 from the field. That's amazing. That's amazing. He was drafted by Golden State in the 2nd round. Played just 2 games in the NBA, and Keith Smart was out of the NBA. Done. 2 games. That was it. He's actually done very, very well as a coach. He's an assistant coach. He's been with Cleveland. He's been with Golden State. He's been with Sacramento, and he is currently an assistant coach with the Miami Heat. Very, very good on the coaching side of it. Had a great college career. Just didn't work out so well playing in the NBA. So Keith Smart gets on our list of least outstanding players of the NCAA tournament. Number 2 on our list. You might not remember this guy. 1993, North Carolina shooting guard Donald Williams. In the final game against the Fab Five, remember that game? Remember the timeout game? Final game against Fab Five. Donald Williams had 25 points. He went 5 of 7 from three-point range. Of course, all we remember about that game is the Chris Webber timeout. But Williams had been great. He had had a phenomenal tournament. He had kind of carried Carolina at certain spots. No one drafted him. He was 6'3". He was a pretty average shooter. He just had a great tournament. Went undrafted. Never played in the NBA. He is currently an assistant coach at Garner Magnet High School in North Carolina. That is the high school that he attended as a kid. But just never panned out for him. No one ever took him. Number two on our list, Donald Williams. One of our least outstanding players of the tournament. And number one on our list, the Daily Dose top five least outstanding players of the NCAA tournament. Not that they weren't great in the tournament. They were great in the tournament. They just didn't do much after. Another award winner. Yes, 1990 Nevada Las Vegas point guard Anderson Hunt. We hand out an award for him every year. The guy who it looks great in the tournament and then disappears and we never hear from again. Do you know why we have an award named for him? See, when you look back at that UNLV team, that amazing team that won it all in 90, they got knocked off in the Final Four 91 by Duke. You remember Larry Johnson. You remember Stacey Augmon. You remember Greg Anthony. You might even remember, David Butler or Moses Scurry. But in the final game of 1990, when they blew out Duke in the championship game, it was Hunt that had 29 points and was named tournament most outstanding player. So Hunt kind of gets probably a little bit too full of himself. He leaves school early as a junior to enter the draft. Now, he's a little guy. He's okay. He's not a consistent enough shooter. But then pictures surfaced of him with Scurry and Butler in a hot tub with noted sports fixture Richard Perry. No one was going to touch Anderson Hunt. No one would go near Anderson Hunt. They weren't going to draft him. They weren't going to sign him. Anderson Hunt never played a second in the NBA. After being named most outstanding player of one of the greatest college basketball teams in history. UNLV, that UNLV team was great. Anderson Hunt was the most outstanding player. Never had a chance. Never had a chance. Went undrafted. He's had some legal issues, had some drug issues, actually had served a little bit of time for embezzlement. Sounds like he's kind of worked out some of his issues. He was working at the Imperial Casino in Vegas and had gotten into coaching some youth sports just a little bit. But our number one least outstanding player of the NCAA tournament, got to be Anderson Hunt. That's why we name one of our college basketball awards after him. Hey, next week, we will be talking NBA playoffs. Playoffs will be set. We will know who is playing who. Take a look at a couple of those series. We will talk some more and more NFL draft. We will get you ready for the NFL draft like no other. At some point, we have to preview some Major League Baseball. I might need John out in SoCal to come on and talk some baseball with me because, I tend to fall asleep during that stuff. And, of course, we will have our Daily Dose top five that we have every week. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to iTunes or wherever you download the podcast from and just give us a quick 5-star rating and a review. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I appreciate you all listening so much. I will see you all next week, everybody.